Welcome to the Spheres of Spirit with Natzy Myers, aka the Lady of the Light. Natzy will discuss the everyday magic and wisdom of spirit which surrounds each of us, waiting to be discovered. She will share some of her remarkable orb photos, proving that our angels, guides, loved ones in spirit, and even pets surround us and guide us in our physical world. During this episode, Natzy will discuss one of the many spheres or aspects of spirit available to us based on her orb photography. She will also share a special channeled message from her guide, Leonini, and do an oracle card reading to help guide you along your personal spiritual adventure. And now, here is your host, orb photographer, author, medium, and speaker, Natzy Myers.
Hi there. I am your host, Natzy Myers, and welcome to the show. Last week, I just returned from a trip from Portugal, and that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. But unfortunately, a nasty cold bug hitchhiked with me on the way home. So please forgive my voice. If I have to cough, I ask for your pardon, and I will do my best to get through this and not have my voice fail me. So I went to Portugal, and, you know, I go on these tours all over the world. And this particular tour was arranged by a gentleman named Freddy Silva. And Freddy Silva is an incredible researcher, author, documentarian. And the purpose of the trip was entitled Uncovering the Secrets of Templars and the Megaliths of Portugal. We visited some amazing sites and I had some pretty amazing experiences. So why would I go on a trip and follow the Knights Templar? Well, it started on my very first trip. And that trip I was with my husband and we went to Scotland. Now, I didn't go to Scotland. I had never even heard of the Knights Templar. This was very early on in my journey. And I went because I was following a book by Catherine Ann Clement and Claire Hartzung, which was Grandmother of Jesus. And so we went to the sacred sites. So the Templars kind of made their presence known to me. I wasn't looking for it. So I could almost say that the Templars have followed me. I haven't followed the Templars. So who are the Knights Templar? I'm sure you have all seen the images of them in their white tunics with their red crosses. You know, they were knights with their lances and flags and on their horses. Well, most people think that the Knights Templar started in Jerusalem in about 1118. And their purpose was, or what they did, was they escorted pilgrims, travelers back and forth and protected them so that they wouldn't get robbed or attacked by highwaymen. Kind of true. Freddie's research has shown, and he's found the documents, that originally there were 9 knights. And they went to Jerusalem, and they didn't escort, these 9 knights didn't escort pilgrims. They locked themselves up, or they sequestered themselves in the Temple Mount, and they did excavations. So if they were there, who was doing the escorting? Well, some say it was a branch or a different sect called the Knights Hospitallers, and they were kind of the warriors and the crusaders. But these original 9 men showed up in Jerusalem, and they were given a wing of the palace, of the royal palace, that had originally been part of the Jewish temple. And then that's how they got their name, Temple, Knights of the Temple, Knights Templar. But why would the king, who just met these 9 people, give them access, full access, to the palace and let them excavate. What kind of knowledge did they bring there? What did they say to this king? What did they find? Well, it is said that in these excavations, they found Gnostic rolls, papyrus or whatever it was written on animal skin. And what did these say or detail? It talked about the true meaning of resurrection. And we're going to get more into that as I moved along on this journey. After they found these rolls, these nine knights then quietly packed up their belongings and left. They went there looking for something. They had prior knowledge. This prior knowledge was so compelling that the king of Jerusalem helped them. So what was that? So there was a man who was very instrumental in moving the Templars along, and his name was Bernard of Clairvaux. And he wrote this big paper or book, and it was called In Praise of the New Knighthood. So after they found these documents in Jerusalem, this man wrote this, and it raised the awareness of the order. And the Templars grew in popularity. In 1139, Pope Innocent XI placed the Templars directly under papal authority, and they were no longer subject to any bishop in whose diocese they might hold property. In other words, they had free rein to do what they wanted. So as a result, they were able to establish themselves in numerous locations. And at the height of their power, it is said they had about 20,000 members, and they set up bases, garrisons, in almost every town in the Holy Land. So just because I did a thing on numerology a little while ago, I said that most people think that the Knights Templar started in 1118. Freddie Silva says it started about 8-10 years before. So that would put him at about 1111. And then Pope Innocent II, or 1-1, is the one who granted them this freedom. So why would the Pope do that? Well, it is said that some of the popes were Templars, and they did what they could to assist them. That's a whole nother story. So the Knights Templar, though, started in Portugal before they went to Jerusalem. They were given land by the king. And this document, this deed from the king that was written up to give them this land, was stamped with the king's seal. And the king's seal, I don't have a picture of it, but the king's seal is round, and it's got symbols all the way around it. And inside, it says it's broken up. Portugal is kind of broken up. It says Portugal, Portugal. But for those who were the initiates, who understood what it was that this was really saying in Portuguese, it said Portugal. And what that means, translates to, is through you the grail. So he was telling the knights, through you the grail. But what is the grail? Is it a cup? Is it some kind of a relic? Is it a belief? Or was it a person? So the Knights Templar were an order who did in fact grow to fabulous wealth. They built remarkable churches and structures, and they protected their secret, the grail, with their very lives. They had to take an oath that they would die before they revealed the secret, and many of them did. So on October the 13th in 1307, now this is nearly 200 years after they first started, and they got this wealth. Well, it's the story goes kind of, and I know I'm going to butcher this, but the King of France ended up owing them so much money that he declared war against them, and he wanted to destroy them and take their riches for himself. So on October 13th, which is one of the reasons we say Friday the 13th is bad, in 1307, he declared that the knights were heretics, and he arrested many, mainly in France, and tortured and killed them. Now, my producer Chris just said it was the first Black Friday. Yes, it was. But these knights went to their grave. You know, I know me, if somebody said, oh, I'm going to put a cigarette out on your hand, or I'm going to put your feet to fire, I'd fold like cheap lawn furniture and go, whatever it is you want to know, you know, I'll tell you. But these people, these men and some women, were so dedicated to their cause and to the secret that they protected, they went to their graves after horrendous, horrendous torture. So, now, I just told you that the Knights Templar got up to 20,000. And some people hear the story that Prince Philip captured the Knights Templar and dissolved them. Well, he didn't get all the knights. You know, he got several hundred, maybe 1,000. But they were all over. And so what did the knights do? They escaped. Many helped them. They disbanded and reformed under different names, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. So the King of France did not succeed in ending the Knights Templar. So in 1319, after all this, the knights were cleared of all charges in Portugal, and the Pope John the 22nd, who was also called a Templar revivalist, supported the Templars and renaming them to the Knights of Christ. So again, here's this another Pope who was a Templar. I find this fascinating because what I'm going to talk about in a little bit goes against everything that the church stands for, but yet these popes helped the Templars. So in 1740, another pope, Pope Benedict the 14th, supported the Templar survival as the Knights of Christ by granting the former headquarters that was owned by the Knights Templar back to the Knights of Christ. So they hung on to their land, to their property. There's the Knights Templar owned and had structures on the most amazing places in the world. You know, these were places of high resonance. And what do I mean by that? It's where the telluric currents of the earth met. It's where water always was present. It's where perhaps other ancient temples were built upon. And the Knights Templar knew this, and they knew how important this was. Important to who and why, and we'll get into that too. So that's kind of a really brief, very small history of the Templars. If you want to really dive into this, because what I'm going to talk about is my experiences here with the Templars and my pictures. I highly recommend you look up Freddie Silva, S-I-L-V-A. He has a wonderful book called The First Templar Nation. He's done several documentaries. One's called The 900-Year Secret of the Knights Templar. It's in two parts on Amazon. And Gaia has one that's called Mystery of the Templar. But he does all kinds of documentary. I don't know how many books he's written. Again, he is an amazing researcher, and he researches so that he has documents and so that the information comes from more than one source. I just finished a book. If you really want to knock your socks off, it's a 500-page book. It's called The Templar Revelation, and it's by Clive Prince and Lynn Picknett. And you're just going to read this and go, what? Some theories, but some are backed up. So it really, really stretches your mind. So how do I and the orbs fit in? Okay. So again, this journey started in Scotland, and Rob, my husband, went with me, and one of the stops was to Rosslyn Chapel. Now, we all know Rosslyn Chapel. If you're a fan of Dan Brown's book, The Da Vinci Code, you know that much of the movie took place at Rosslyn Chapel. It is filled, utterly filled with sacred geometry and Templar imagery and sacred symbols. You look at it and you go, oh, that's nice, but we have no idea what it all means. So my husband was, there's a crypt that goes down under the chapel. Then they call it a crypt, but some say that was like an initiation area. If you go down there, the acoustics are incredible. In fact, many choirs go down there and record. And we were a small group and there were some amazing singers. And so they started to sing and chant when we were there. And it was like a whole choir of angels joined us. The acoustics were just incredible. So after we did that, I took a picture. Rob, my husband, was at the front at the altar, and I went, oh, I'm going to take a picture. So Chris, if we can bring up that first picture. And there he is. And he's bent over. He's trying to read something on the little altar. But I'll draw your attention to the orb that was next to him. And now this was, again, very early on in my orb photography. And I was thrilled to get this orb. And it was the only one I got down in the crypt. But I thought, how interesting that it was right next to my husband. Now, so for those of you who have read my books, you know that I always refer to my husband as my knight. And I often tell him, thank you, Chris, for that. I often tell him, you know, you didn't have a choice. You got assigned to me. You have to protect me. You know, that was your life contract. Sorry about that, but I'm glad you're here. So we went to, after we left there, we went to another church. And it was, they called churches in Scotland kirks. And this church that we went to was originally built by the Templars in the 12th century. But the current ruins were built by the Knights Hospitallers in the 1300s. It's called the Old Kirk in the Village of Temple. So in Gaelic, it was known as Bail Men Troduck. That's what the village, and I know I'm just destroying that in Gaelic, but it means the town of warriors. So this was the first area that the Templars went to and quote unquote set up shop. And in 1128, David I, the Scottish king, granted the land to them. You know, they just, here, you have this. You know, it's amazing that so much was given to them, right? And the Templars made this little village, this little church area and the surrounding village, their main place that they operated out of. So we got to go there, and you can't go in now, but when we went, we could go into the ruins. We went in the ruins. My husband was there. We meditated. The leader, Annie Williams, who's been on my show, she had her harp, so she played. And afterwards, this lady came up, part of our group, and she said, I don't know how to tell you this, and she was a medium, but she told my husband, she goes, I saw a Templar knight overlay himself on you. Again, this was really early on in both our spiritual journeys, so we really didn't know what to make of that. But anyway, so we left there, and we went back to Ember, and we were breaking up for lunch, and my husband and I went to this little pub, and we're sitting there talking. He goes, hold your hand out. And I said, why? He said, hold your hand out. And I said, okay. So I held my hand out and he went like this and he dropped a rock or a stone in my hand. And I went, what is this? And then I looked at it and I gasped because this rock that he just randomly picked up is a miniature replica of the church that we are in. I get goosebumps every time I tell this story. He didn't know that until I pointed it out. You can see the windows, you can see the shrubs, you can see the archways, and it's only like maybe the size of a quarter. Now, we're not supposed to do that, you know, but he picked it up on the way out. It wasn't inside the church. So I said, okay, I'll keep it. And maybe by that time it was too late. Anyway, we couldn't go back. But what are the chances that he's going to pick up this rock that is a miniature replica of the church, of the first church in Scotland of the Templars? So that was kind of my introduction to the Knights Templar. So now I'm going to go again at these, the Knights seem to, kind of follow me. And I went to Malta. Now I went to Malta because I wanted to see, the tour guide told me, she was a friend of mine. She goes, Nancy, Malta has more megalithic structures and stone circles, kind of like Stonehenge, than any place in the world. And you can go in there and you can touch them. And so I said, oh, I'm coming. You know, I want to go in there. What I didn't realize was the connection of Malta to the Knights Templar. So in the early 14th century, which is, I guess, the 1300s, the Templars, again, were given the island of Malta. Here they are. They're given this land again. And it was given to them by the King of Sicily. And it was given to them as a reward for their services during the Crusades. So if you look at the Malta flag, I mean, it's even very similar to the Templar cross, red and white. When they got there, the Templars then took on and they built a whole new city, a whole new capital city, which was called Burgu. And this became their base of operations in the Mediterranean. They also built this amazing structure called Fort St. Angelo. It's a very prominent, huge, a very high fortress in the harbor. And if you're a fan of Game of Thrones, they filmed there. So, you know, it's just an impressive and imposing structure. So while in Malta, one of the things that we did is we went to these cliffside crypts. Now, these they're carved right into the limestone. We had to climb up. It wasn't without some risk and danger, but we climbed up there. And there's, I don't know how many, maybe 40, 50 different crypts. But you walk into these, and some have stairs, some are bigger, some are smaller. And they say that these date back to the Bronze Age. But when we went into this one area, one room, it was pretty big. And pretty big, what is that? Maybe 15 by 20 feet, you know. And you can see in there that it looked like maybe it was an altar. And there was these niches carved in. And I went, well, that looks like a symbol of the Knights Templar. So the people that were doing the tour said, we're going to have ceremony in here. And we did it as the sun was setting. It was very moving. We had a fire. And so, but before the ceremony started, of course, me, I'm taking pictures. So if we can bring up that next picture, Chris. So here's the picture, and this is my friend Wendy, and she's setting up the stuff for the ceremony. And of course, you see the big orb right next to her. But that's not the one I want to draw your attention to. You see the niche above her head and the blue orb. And when I looked at it, now again, the best place to see my orbs are always on the back of my camera. So you're going to have to trust me a little bit on this. But when I looked at it, I went, that's a Knight Templar. It's a Templar Knight. So if we can go to the next picture, Chris, I tried to outline it and I zoomed in. So there's the zoomed in on the left side. And then on the right side, I tried to draw him. But you can see his white tunic. You can see his helmet very clearly. And you can even see the cross. So again, they came to me. I had no idea that I was going to encounter a Knight Templar in Malta. So thank you, Chris. Now, again, these will be on my website and here on Om Times Radio, so you can take your time and look at that yourself. So the next place we went to, was France. And I just told you that, of course, the Templars had a big presence there in France. And Oh, I'm so glad you can see him, Bonnie. Bonnie just said I can see him. Thank you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to break here, and then I'm going to talk about the France, and I'm going to talk about then Portugal. So we'll be right back.
Om Times TV. The story told in Entering the Light Fantastic, Discovering Life After Life Through Orbs, is about Nancy Myers' spiritual and emotional rising from the devastating ashes of loss caused by the sudden and unexpected passing of her son, Robbie. Just like the legend of the reborn phoenix, Nancy's life purpose and focus was transformed. With the help from her son in spirit, Nancy found herself providing proof through orbs that our souls do not die with our bodies. In her second book, Encircled by the Light Fantastic, A Deeper Journey into the Light with Orbs, Nancy continues chronicling her path of gaining spiritual knowledge and expanding acceptance of what is possible while traveling to many sacred and ancient sites around the world. She shares these experiences with you along with her photographs of remarkable spirit encounters. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
Is it time yet?
It's time.
Donating pet food is one of the many ways you can help families in your community. Pets and people belong together. Learn more at petsandpeopletogether.org.
And we're back. Someone asked me, how can they find me on Facebook? It's called The Orb Connection on Facebook, and it's public, so you can find me there. So when I went to France, and one of the reasons I went to France was one of the books that I read, again, talked about the Divine Feminine, and I was on a tour, but I had 2 days in Paris by myself, and there's a very important cathedral called the Chartres Cathedral, and it has an amazing labyrinth. And the book talked extensively about it. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go to that. It wasn't part of the tour, but I wanted to go. So I got on a train. Here I am all by myself in Paris, figured it out, got on a train and went out to Chartres Cathedral. And unfortunately, a lot has changed since I've been there. They have whitewashed the inside and it's just not the same. But when I was there, it was quite impressive. And so as I do, as I walk around, I take pictures. And when I walked up to this one little niche, there I see who I think is, you know, Mother Mary, the Virgin with baby Jesus, but it's dark skinned, it's black. And I went, well, this is unusual. So I took a picture. So if we can bring that next picture up, Chris. And I'm bringing this up because it's important. So there's the Madonna and baby, who they have now since whitewashed, but it was made from dark wood. It was made to be that way, but they changed it. But you see that orb is actually perfectly placed below her. It's like, hey, you need to pay attention to this. So what is a Black Madonna? I had never heard of the Black Madonnas. Thank you, Chris. So from 1100 AD to 1300 AD, hundreds of Gothic cathedrals were constructed all over Europe, many of them by the Knights Templar. And these great Gothic cathedrals, such as the ones in Chartres, were dedicated to Our Lady. Our Lady is usually thought to be the Blessed Virgin Mary, or by some, Mary Magdalene. But most of these cathedrals were also home to the Black Madonnas, of which about 400 to 500, they say, mainly are still today. But what is it, Black Madonna? What does that signify? Well, the Black Virgins have been associated by historians and archaeologists with mother goddesses, such as Isis, and deities sometimes represented as black. Historically, Isis of Egypt was the first recorded appearance of a Black Madonna. The Black Madonna is often associated with the concept of the divine feminine and is seen as a powerful symbol of the mother goddess. Now, here I'm standing in Chartres Cathedral, which was built by the Knights Templar, and in this church, and it's filled with Templar symbolism and sacred geometry. And in this church is the Black Madonna. I found out later that several of their churches housed Black Madonnas. And the Black Madonna, it says, goes back to Isis, all the way back to the divine feminine, one of the most powerful goddesses of Egypt, Isis. So who was Isis? According to the only ancient Roman novel in Latin to have survived in its entirety, it is called The Metamorphosis of Apuleius. Isis speaks, and here is what she says. I am nature, the universal mother, mistress of all the elements, primordial child of time, sovereign of all things spiritual, queen of the dead, queen also of all the immortals, the single manifestation of all the gods and goddesses. When the Isis cult comes up over and over and over again in the research with the Knights Templar, and the Isis cult was very active during Roman times. It was based on the Isis cult all the way back to Egypt. But if I had to explain it to you, it's more like, you know, we think of the pagans or the Wiccas as being nature worshipers. And that's kind of what it was. But it was also honoring the divine feminine. The divine feminine was very important in Egypt long ago. And that was a recurring theme of the Knights Templars, was the divine feminine. So I wanted to tell you something about, and it was about our spirituality, and it was about the ritual of resurrection. So we're going to talk more about that in a second. But here's something that I read, and I thought, wow, this is really something. This puts, in a nutshell, kind of how the church ended our spiritual link to the universe. When the infamous Council of Constantinople met in 869, it was legislated that the human being is only a twofold being, purely only body and soul. Any reference of understanding of the spiritual nature of humanity was considered heresy. However, slowly but surely, the Black Madonna started to populate the landscape. They didn't want to lose that link. So as the council legislated away the consciousness of the spiritual nature of humanity. Let me say that again. The Council of Constantinople tried to legislate away the consciousness of the spiritual nature of humanity. I just found that, kind of upsetting. But what is heresy? What is a heretic? Well, if you go back, and again, I talk about Freddie Silva, but he's a great researcher in, I believe it's called entomology, where you go back and you find the roots of the words or how they were originally introduced and used. And here was one of the earliest definitions of heresy. Originally, a heretic was defined as someone who is in possession of the facts and able to choose. So what did the church do? They didn't want us to choose. They only wanted us to believe what they were giving us. And the Knights Templar was involved in protecting those truths. You know, the Knights Templars were amazing builders, and their structures are incredible, and they're all over Europe, and I've been to many of them, and I'm going to talk about a few more here. But they're, as I said earlier, they always seem to be built on more ancient sites. Even the church, the Catholic Church, if they saw something that was Druid or pagan, would build on top of it. They would claim it for themselves. Why? Well, for two reasons. One, to claim it for themselves and try to eliminate any knowledge of that. But they also knew that it was a powerful spot. It is said that even Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris is built on an ancient Isis temple. Now, we went, we saw the picture of the orb with the Black Madonna. So now I want to take you back to Portugal. So we went to this castle up on top of the mountain. We had to hike up there. It was a long hike. And it was a fortress, again, in an ancient place that has been worshipped and venerated for millennia. It poured rain that day that we went up there. I mean, the raindrops were so big they hurt when they hit you, and the whole place got flooded. So we went back up at night. But again, it's got this huge initiation area, a well. It doesn't hold water. I don't know why they call it a well. But you see that in Templar sites over and over and over again. One of the common things with the Knights Templar sites is it's all about the process of resurrection. You come in one side, you go through this initiation process, and you come out the other side, usually at night. And what's the first thing you see? You see Venus, which is the female, right? But the resurrection was always about raising your own spiritual level. So now that castle that I just told you about, it was called El Morolan. And there's another one, that one up on the mountain that I went to is called Monsanto. Sorry, I'm horrible with names. We went to another one. We had to take a boat ride, And this, again, was a very important site for the Templars. And you can see it's a fort, it's a castle, and there's a date over the door, which is 1129. But when you walk into the center of the court, you can tell that something else existed here. And you even see a chair, a throne, if you will, carved right into the rock. And Freddie told us this was built, again, on the site of an ancient Isis temple. I found it fascinating first that the Templars did that. But the second thing that I found fascinating was there's so many temples to Isis throughout Europe. So next we went to this estate. This is an amazing place. It's called the Quinta de Regalaria, and it's in Sintra, Portugal. And it's about a 10-acre site, has amazing histories. It's always kind of been in the hands of the Templars or protected by someone for the Templars. But recently, in recent history, in 1893, it was bought in auction by a Freemason, and his name was Cavalho Monteiro. And so he took over the grounds. The grounds are incredible. There's water features. There's gardens. There's a huge castle. There's two kinds of churches. There's initiation areas. But it's always you come in one side and you go out the other. So this Cavalho Monteiro refurbished everything. And he also built this church. And it's not very big. It's maybe 20 by 15. And we couldn't go in it, but we could look in it. But outside, the carvings and the alchemical symbols and the symbols that are associated with the Templars. A lot of Templar sites, when you go, they have pine cones. What's the pine cone represent? The pineal gland. They have green men. If you know what the green men are, they're like faces that have like leaves coming out that represents many things, but one is a connection to nature. They have all their symbols, their sacred geometry. And so I peeked in there. Now, I have to tell you, the divine feminine was protected and revered by the Knights Templar. That's part of the secret that I'm going to tell you at the very end. But they thought that Mary Magdalene, even though that's not her real name, it's more of a title. We don't know her name. It's been lost. But that she was very important. You've heard that Mary Magdalene was the apostle to the apostles. And in this church, if we can bring up the next picture, Chris, you can see that they had a painting done where Jesus is crowning Mary Magdalene. That says a lot. Not only was she the apostle to the apostle, but anybody who holds the crown is usually the one in charge, right? So can we go to the next picture there, Chris? The other way. There. Now, over the doorway, when you look up, is the symbol in the plaster of the archway. And there you see the triangle with the eye of Horus, the third eye. You see it over on top of the Templar cross. So, you know, I've done things on the eye of Horus before, but the triangle is one of the most simplest and most powerful shapes. It is a perfect symbol of balance and harmony. Pointing upwards, it symbolizes our elevation to a higher consciousness towards the ultimate goal of enlightenment. And that's what the Templars were all about. The triangle is also the symbol of the third eye chakra, which is the seat of intuition, inner wisdom, and it's associated with heightened spiritual growth and the fulfillment of our highest potential. So I have to tell you what happened to me. I love going on these trips because something always changes. You do not go to these sites and come back the same. So what spirit does with me, and if you've read my books, you know that they, in my dreams, they do all kinds of stuff and they give me symbols. And I love symbols. I did a show on symbols. So I'm asleep the very first night. And what they show is a black background. And then they kind of draw like in white neon. That's how they do it. They draw a perfect triangle. And I have visual aids. So I'll show you my triangle. So they drew a triangle. So I go, okay, I see a triangle. So now what? Well, then they took that white line and they drew it. I'm doing this. It's like looking in a mirror. Right down the middle. Okay. And after they did that, I got to get my next visual aid here so I can show you. Okay. So here's the triangle and it had the line on it, right? So then it opened and flipped and then came back together. Let me put that back together. And that's what it formed. It formed a diamond. So I thought, wow, okay, so am I going to see a diamond? What's going on? So I went to, now a diamond, I had to look up what this diamond mean in sacred geometry. The diamond represents a journey to higher understanding. Perfect. The points of the diamond symbolically resemble purity and perfection. The points can also be interpreted as a peak of intellectual knowledge. Well, for me, that doesn't apply. But diamond shapes translate to clarity and enlightenment. So I kept looking for my symbol. I kept going, okay, where's my symbol? I know I'm going to see it. And I asked everybody, have you ever seen a symbol like this? And, you know, with the Knights Templar? No. Well, on that same 10-acre site that, you know, is amazing, there are two what they call initiation wells, and they are amazing. And the first, Chris, if we can bring that up. Oh, I wanted to, the next picture, that one right there, that was also in Malta. And that was on the back of a statue of a knight. So again, you had the triangle with the eye. So I just wanted to tie that in, that this was something that the Templars believed in greatly. So if we can go to the next picture, Chris. So this was the initiation well, and you can see, yes, I did capture a lot of orbs in there. You walk downstairs in a circular pattern, and there's these niches in there, these alcoves, and there's 17 of them. 17 is a very important number to the Templars. So this particular well, when you get to the bottom, there's a tile or a marble or whatever design of the Templar symbol and all that. And I can just imagine the knights walking down, you know, down and down and down and down. Maybe they sang, maybe they were blindfolded, who knows? And what was in these 17 niches? Was it their counterparts urging them on? I don't know. But you started at the top and then you walk down. So the next picture shows you once you get down and look up, if we can go to the next picture, Chris, that's what you see. So that's from the bottom. So it's quite impressive. And this again was built by the gentleman who bought the land in auction back in 1893, who was a Freemason. So there is another well on this property that not a lot of people go to, and they call it the unfinished initiation well. Well, I don't think it's unfinished at all. I think it was purposely built like that. So if we can go to the next picture. So here is the well, and you can see it's totally different. There is no way to come down from the top. You enter it through tunnels. And that is really indicative of so many of the Templar sites, is you come in one thing on one end, you walk through a tunnel, and you come out on another. Sometimes it's feet, sometimes it's miles. but it's always about the resurrection, always rising up. So when we were in the quote unquote unfinished well, we did the chant and we're talking, and then all of a sudden I looked up and I gasped and I went, there it is. So if we can go to the next picture. Do you see the diamond? Purposely built, purposely, and it was right above my head. And so what did the diamond represent? A journey to higher understanding. That's what these initiation wells were. They were all about the resurrection. So thank you, Chris. When I saw that, I just went, oh my gosh, you know, spirit is amazing. So what was the Templar secret? I'm going to maybe ruffle a few feathers here, but this was their secret. Their secret was that Jesus was a mortal and that his life had been, I don't want to say, kind of manufactured to an ancient story. And this ancient story was told over and over and over and over again throughout time, because there's like 23 other what they call godmen who had the same experience of being symbolically nailed to a cross on a winter solstice and after 3 days rose from the dead. 23 different stories before Jesus. They also say that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene and that they had children. Some say two, some say three. The bloodline, the Templars and those before them that they protected, was not Jesus's, but it was Mary Magdalene's, the divine feminine, which was traced all the way back to Isis. That is what the Knights Templar protected. They believe that Mary Magdalene was the high priestess of the Isis cult. And this cult, by the way, was also, I don't want to say worshipped, but people like Socrates, Plato, Leonardo da Vinci, they all understood this and were a part of this. But back then with Jesus, John the Baptist was going to take his ministry of this cult and expand it. Now, as we all know, John the Baptist had his head cut off, unfortunately. So Jesus was a disciple, according to the Knights Templar, of John the Baptist. And so he took over. That's quite a secret. And you can see that if that information came out, what it would do to the church's grip on people. So Freddie Silva says, what if the understanding of resurrection is false? That it was once the highest initiation performed in mystery schools around the world as far back as 8,000 BC. That a suppressed gospel described it as something to be experienced by the living, not the dead. That it involves an out-of-body journey to the other world and back. The prominent scholars and initiates, like Socrates and Plato, described it as the pinnacle of one's spiritual development. Now, if you want to see more on this, he has an amazing documentary, and it's called Other World, Some Places Take You, Someplace Else. Ancient temples and other sacred sites were designed to generate a unique resonant environment where the laws of nature are harnessed and amplified. That's why the Templars built their temples or rebuilt on these sites. They knew the power that it held. So I know I'm running out of time, but there's another documentary of Freddie Silva's, and it's called Sacred Space and the Healing Power of Resonance. So how much time do I have, Chris? Do I have time to read my Leonini message? Do I have 2 minutes? Help me. I have a minute and a half. Okay. So I've been sick, so I haven't been able to channel Leonini, but I have one that I've done before. She showed me a stairway to heaven. Is there really a stairway to heaven? In a sense, yes. The staircase laid out before you that rises in front of you seems to extend to infinity and disappear. You are able to take one step up each time you demonstrate compassion when caring for others, in loving others, in putting others first, in understanding others' difficulties, in having tolerance of others different than you. You may take a step up each time you do not judge, and with each decision that you make for the greater good. Each prayer that you send for the betterment of someone else, for the forgiveness of someone else, you take a step up. It is not actually to heaven that you ascend, but to a higher frequency, a higher vibration. The staircase looks as if it disappears because it heads to another dimension, a higher dimension. This climb is not slow and steady, fast or furious, but can be wrought with stops and starts, pauses, and even a step or two backwards. That's okay, such is life. When one rises and ascends the stairway, it does affect all. However, all will not arrive at the same time. You have the stamina and the strength to go as far as you desire in this lifetime. It is up to you. We on this side applaud each step, even if it is only one. So that was my story about my trip, what happened to me. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you listened to it with an open mind. I hope you check out some of those books and documentaries and explore all possibilities. I want to thank you for tuning in, and I will see you next time. Take care now. Bye-bye.